Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Show here on Love Sport Radio. I'm Johnny Burrow.
I'm Abigail Johnson.
And we're joined in the studio by two stars of the tennis world. We've got Anna Smith, professional tennis player. And of course, it's a delight to be joined back in the studio by Roz Sattar, who's Love Sport's woman on the ground at the French Open. She's left the snails behind. She's back with us here in sunny London. And we've got a glorious tournament to look back on, but where did it all go wrong for Joe Konta?
Did it go wrong for Joe Konta? I mean, let's look at it. Let's take a step back and look at it. She hadn't ever won. She won five matches. She lost the semi-final on a surface that's not necessarily her best. But above all, she's turned that corner from really struggling to get out of matches like that normally to having sort of picked up a bit of confidence. It's all about confidence now going on the grass. But yeah, there are a few howlers that she'll probably have nightmares over, I will admit.
Well, here in the studio last week, we were talking about Konta being one of the highest seeds left in the draw and having so many chances in this tournament. She was a legitimate contender after not having form on clay prior to this year at the WTA level. Looking at that match specifically with Markéta Vondrousova in the semi-finals, Anna, you know Joe quite well. What do you think she could have hoped to have done differently in that match?
Probably just maybe taking a couple more of the chances. Like you said, there are a couple of howlers in there. But again, I think she's probably got to look back and kind of take a step back, like you said, and realise that, you know, she hadn't won a match at the French Open before. And to come in and win five matches in a row and almost have the chance of making the final, I think, you know, it's a step in the right direction. And she has to use that confidence going into the grass season, which is probably her most favoured surface, I would have thought. So I think it's really positive. And obviously she'll be disappointed she didn't make the final. But at the same time, I think she's got to look at the positives and use that moving forward for the rest of the year.
That's a good point about taking the positives. Well, in 2015, when Johanna Konta really broke through at the WTA level, we saw a massive change in her mentality, in her confidence and the way she was going for things. How easy do you think she'll find it to just draw the positives from this fortnight, having done so well, but also having missed a bit of an opportunity?
I was going to say, just listening to Dmitry Zavilov talking about her, I can understand why she's turned this corner, because he's such a calming influence. I mean, I came out of that inspired and I don't even know one end of a racket from the other half the time. So, you know, he's such a calming influence and he's let her find her way. So while we're wringing our hands in unproductive dismay about her missing all these drop shots, he's giving her the courage to try them and figure out what's going right and what's going wrong. And I think that, and you're talking about her mentality when she was with Esteban Carril. Yeah. And I think she's found that kind of stability that was missing when it was just Wim Fissette and when it was just Michael Joyce. She now has somebody that can do both of those.
And Anna, I think you're quite confident in Joe's mentality, full stop. And how do you think she'll transfer that to grass?
I don't think she'll have a problem. I think she's a very level-headed kind of girl. She's very smart in the way she looks back at things. I think she doesn't ever get extremely excited about something and doesn't ever get so low about something. So I think she'll be able to find that, the positives, and then be able to use that. I don't think she's going to be, you know, obviously she's going to be disappointed, but I think she's going to look at it and actually realise that she's done something that she's never done before. And then, you know, really look forward to the grass season and playing in front of the home fans again.
Well, she did sound upbeat after that French Open run, which is a great thing. Well, Konta's loss was Ashley Barty's gain, the 23-year-old making a breakthrough, winning the French Open for her maiden title. How unexpected was that and how impressed were you with Barty's run?
I wouldn't say it was unexpected at all. I think she's probably been one of the most consistent players on the tour this year. She's shown that she can play on any surface. She has the weapons. She has that cool, calm, collected sort of demeanour. And she doesn't get ruffled by anything. So I felt like, you know, as the tournament went on, she was probably the favourite just in terms of the confidence that she's built up over the year. And I really wasn't surprised that she went on to lift the trophy.
Well, Barty's won more matches on the WTA Tour than any other player this season. Someone that's won more French Open titles than anyone else is Rafael Nadal. 12, big fat number 12. Can he get more, Roz?
Yes, probably.
Can we say otherwise?
I don't know. I mean, I thought if team had to get that first set, I think. And the level of play in that first set was ridiculous. Ridinky-donk. I've never seen anything like it. What was really funny is in the second set, it was very flat, but there was not a sniff of a break point until right at the very end. And then suddenly we were like, oh, he's got two set points. How did that happen? And it just took everybody by surprise. And then we thought, great, we've got a match on. And what was interesting was he had a dip, as often happens if you take a set. And he said, for anybody else, if it was against anybody else, it wouldn't have mattered. But against Nadal, he stepped on me, which I thought was cute.
One prospect for Nadal now isn't just winning more at the French Open. It's possibly catching Roger Federer overall in terms of men's majors. Let's hear what Rafa has to say.
You can't be frustrated all the time because the neighbor has a bigger house than you, or a bigger TV, or, you know, a better garden. And if at the end of my career I am able to win a couple of more Grand Slams and be closer to Roger, will be unbelievable.
I'm fully confident that both Nadal and Federer have a bigger house than me. But can the Spaniard catch Roger?
Well, Anna, what do you think?
I don't know, because I think Roger still has potential to win a couple more, especially with Wimbledon, US Open, Australia. And then, I don't know, I think probably maybe not Wimbledon, I wouldn't have thought. So I don't think he's playing anything leading into it. And he's been susceptible in the last few years in the first rounds. So I'd probably be less inclined to say Wimbledon, but he's always has a chance at US Open. But again, so does Roger. That's the problem. Roger has always got the potential to win more, and he's always going to be chasing. So I probably wouldn't say that he'll catch Roger. I don't think anyone's going to catch Roger.
Well, the thing with these guys, the top three, that they go in cycles. So one of them will win a few slams, and the next one will kind of have a run at the slams, and the next one, they seem to take it in turns. But Nadal has this thing with the French Open, best of five sets on the surface that he loves. Now, if Nadal wins 2-3 more French Opens, that takes him ahead of where Federer is currently. Can he bank on the French Open alone, do you think, to help him surpass Federer?
I think he's probably going to have to bank on at least one, if not two more. But I've been calling team the Prince of Clay for I don't know how long, because I do think he's getting closer. Mm-hmm. Up until the end of that final, everybody was still talking about Djokovic. And I still firmly believe that Djokovic will get more than Federer in the long run. And I think that we're going to end up with all three of them on 20 of some description before they finally call it a day. But I agree with you. He's so much more versatile across all the surfaces. I mean, maybe even take clay out of the equation for Federer. So I see Wimbledon between him and Djokovic, to be absolutely honest. And then when we get to the hard courts, I think it's the three and, I don't know, throw in Wawrinka for a good measure because he was showing some signs of danger.
Del Potro, perhaps?
Maybe. It depends. He's such a little fragile flower, though, sometimes. I just worry about him. But I'd love to see him contend. I put Stan in the mix before Del Potro, though.
Well, there's a lot of contenders. Let's talk about Dominic Thiem briefly, because he's just had, obviously, that great run at the French. What is his potential to transfer this form? Because he won Indian Wells, beating Roger Federer in the final. Can we see him make a move on grass, maybe?
I don't know about grass. I think he's going to have a dip. But, yeah, I mean, he won Indian Wells, and he was in impressive form in California in the desert. It was good to watch. So maybe put him in for the US, perhaps Australia, to build up on that momentum?
Potentially. I'm not 100% sure. I probably wouldn't put him as one of the favourites. But the problem is that you can't ever look past the top three. That's the thing. They are so consistent overall. You get these guys who suddenly can make, you know, quarter semis. But as soon as it gets to the money end of the tournament, you always bank on those guys coming through. That's a problem. And they've had so much experience. They have so much inner belief in themselves. So I don't know, I just find it hard whilst they're still going to back against them.
Well, what I found really impressive was at the French Open, the top four seeds in the men's event making the final rounds. That does make them harder to contend with going into the rest of the season. We'll have to see if they can sustain that form across the grass, which we will be talking about shortly. Much more to come on the tennis show. Stay with us. We'll be back soon to talk grass courts, rain, and plenty of controversial things said by Boris Becker recently. Keep with us, and we'll have it all here in the studio, and it's going to be great.
This is Love Sport.
Well, here we are at the tennis show. It's me, Abigail Johnson, joined by British doubles player Anna Smith and the wonderful Roz Sattar, talking all things tennis. We've had a bit of a look back at the French Open. Now to look at some current affairs in our down-the-line segment of the show, which can get quite controversial, so fasten your seatbelts. Beneath the surface, transferring form to grass, actually the down the line coming a bit later on, lost my place. Well, who doesn't from time to time? Transferring form to grass, my friends, who's going to do that well? And who did well in France that can excel on grass, do we think?
Well, I'd definitely say that Federer chap will probably be quite good at transferring. Uh-huh. He's had some good matches under his legs as well, which I think in the past he's gone in maybe a little bit match shy. So it'll be interesting to see how he hits the ground running. Mm-hmm. Djokovic will get over his strop and of various bits of weather. He'll transfer well. Uh-huh. Nadal, I find it is going to be, he's always a bit of a danger. If he makes it to the second week, then hurrah, but he's always a candidate for a shock exit.
I think if he can get through those first couple of rounds, I think we've seen that he's been susceptible in those first two. If he comes up against a big hitter who kind of play lights out tennis, then I think he struggles a little bit. But mm-hmm. like you said, if he can negotiate the first week, once he gets into that second week, he knows how to win, and that is a massive thing. So, you know, I wouldn't count him out, but I wouldn't say he's totally...
You wouldn't be trotting down to the bookies with your fiver.
No, I'd probably go Djokovic or Federer.
Well, let's take the second of those, Roger Federer, who played the clay court season for the first time since 2016. Now, he was playing very freely, no pressure on his shoulders. We saw that reflected in his results. So, what impact do we think that will have on Federer on grass, if any at all?
As I said, he's coming in match sharp, which he hasn't done for the last couple of years. Mm. I thought that the telly was glitching at one stage because he had such aggression and pop on his shots that the ball was coming back so quickly in the first round. I was like, oh, there's something wrong with my Lenovo ThinkPad. I'm just going to go and complain and tell them to come and reboot it. And it wasn't. I mean, I've never seen him play with such aggression before. So it'll be interesting to see if he transfers that to the grass, because sometimes that can work on the grass and sometimes that can actually catch you out because of the dinky bounces.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they have too many dinky bounces at Wimbledon, the grass sharp. Yeah. I'm pleased with you with you saying that. But I mean, I think the grass courts play a bit more like a hard court these days. So I don't think he'll have any issues transferring. But like you said, I think he used his forehand. His forehand was massive from what I saw. And then he always has that ability to change, to serve volley, drop in a slice, throw in those drop shots. And he's so versatile in comparison to a lot of the other guys that I think it's just so much more suited to him than any of the other ones.
Anna, for you personally, what's your favourite surface to play on
grass.
And why?
Grass.
I like playing
grass.
On grass. Why?
52 weeks a year. I think for me, because I'm not the biggest of girls, so I probably would not ever be able to hit anyone off the court. So for me, I like to be able to slice. I like to come to the net. So for me to be able to use that, I find that my variation kind of works well on grass. So for me, I've always preferred grass.
So hearing that insight from an experienced professional, which of both the men's and women's players do you think have the kind of skill set to excel?
Well, you've got to look at someone who's got the big serve, you know, the variety, as we've said. And I think a lot of the players that are towards the top of the rankings right now, to be honest, are there for a reason, because they can transfer their form across multiple surfaces. I'm looking at someone like Naomi Osaka, who's not yet found her feet on grass, but maybe now has a bit more of the confidence to produce because, she's got the big serve and she's got the big ground strokes, but she can also pull out the drop shot when she needs it, and she does have the versatility in her game. So, I mean, probably mental issues a bit at the moment, what with the early loss at the French Open, not having won a title since Australia, but she definitely has the potential. On the men's side, I thought Stefanos Tsitsipas was going to break through on grass. I did not expect him to perform as well as he did on clay. I'm not sure about you guys, but Tsitsipas is a name I thought would be coming to the fore when we hit the grass courts.
Well, I didn't doubt his ability on clay because I think very early on when he won in the first round, he actually said that he felt that, I think he got taught on clay and felt that young kids ought to start on clay because then they're fearless then. Mm. Whereas as you get older, you know, so for, maybe for British kids playing on clay, they're a little bit more tentative the older that you get. But I think he'll be amazing on grass. Osaka does have a mental thing about Europe because she said in Stuttgart that she always seems to get injured in Stuttgart. Lo and behold, she did. And then she always seems to get injured when it comes to the grass. So I think she's actually got a mental sort of block about this European swing based on previous experiences. So the interesting thing is whether she'll be able to get over that.
Okay. Anna, any names that stand out to you?
I don't think you can look past Ash Barty as well. Mm-hmm. I think the if you look at her game style, I think, you know, she has great serve, a massive forehand, slices a lot. Not many girls like playing against slice. So I think she's one who, I'm not saying she's going to win back-to-back Grand Slams or anything, but, you know, I wouldn't have thought she'd be too far away. I think she's got the game. I think she's got that mentality. And not, you know, not many girls like playing on the grass necessarily. So I'd say maybe she'd be up there for me.
Well, some of the players that have excelled so far this year aren't in quite great physical shape at the moment. I'm thinking Bianca Andreescu, who soared to the title in Indian Wells, impressed so many people, young teenager with so much going on in her game, but she's not quite physically fit yet. Now, the grass season is quite punishing in the shortness of it. Do you think there is enough time for that kind of player to get back on track?
I really hope that that she doesn't rush it. I think she rushed things to get back on the clay and, you know, ended up sort of dying a death, in, you know, way earlier than we expected. And it's going to be punishing. You know, next year she'd be a real one to watch. But if I was her coach, I'd be sort of sitting and saying, right, you need to get this shoulder done and dealt with and then pick up again in the hard courts, maybe even miss the grass.
You've got to play it carefully. We saw some interesting names going deep at the French Open. Amanda Anisimova took out Simona Halep, the defending champion. On the men's side, Karen Khachanov took out Del Potro, and he was having a good run. What's the potential for these guys? Just because they've had a good run at the French Open, are they now going to be more exposed to the spotlight? Is that going to have an impact on them? And do you think they'll feel more pressure to produce on the grass?
I guess it's very individual how much pressure they put on themselves. I would have thought, you know, Khachanov's top 20, so I think he's going to kind of put pressure on himself anyway. He expects to do well. So I don't think I'd like to think he probably wouldn't put any more pressure, and maybe his expectations have increased a little bit. But, you know, these guys who are top 20, top 30, even top 10, you know, they're expecting to be winning big titles. So, you know, and all of us who play tennis want to win. We hate losing. So, you know, I think he's going to go in there high on confidence. And also Anisimova, you know, she's fearless. She's 17. She's got the world at her feet. She thinks she can do whatever. So I think she's got that kind of young, naive, fearless attitude, which will stand her in good stead. And you never know what's going to happen.
Well, there are several fearless women on the tour. And at Wimbledon, I'm looking particularly at the women's draw and seeing that it's pretty open. The men's side of things, that was, you had your obvious contenders at the French Open. The women's, just round by round, there were more and more players that seemed to be in with a chance of lifting the trophy. Will that be the same situation at Wimbledon? Will much have changed in the few weeks from Paris?
It's difficult to say because it's such a marked difference in surface that, you know, I think those players with variety are going to shine through, whereas with clay I think it's more about understanding how to hit through the surface. But I mean, you know, you can't count out the Williamses, you can't count, you know, there's a lot of people you can't count out, and it'll be interesting to see how other players like Halep, actually, can she match her semi-final run, because since then she's been woeful on the green stuff.
Well, Halep did make the semi-finals once at Wimbledon a while back. Obviously, grass is a faster surface, so therefore better on the whole for power players and players that can mix it up quite quickly. Anna, we saw some of the power players actually producing pretty well on the clay. Do you think some of the counterpunchers might be able to step up on the faster surface of grass?
I think it'll be tough. I think you probably have to look maybe more at the big hitters again. I think if you look back at who's won it over the previous years, you've Serena, Sharapova. I mean, Kerber probably isn't the biggest hitter, but she doesn't mix it up at all. She just hits flat all day long. Mm. So I think you'd be more inclined to say a fast-paced player would win. I don't know. I just don't see... Apart from Ash Barty, who has the variation, but she also has a big game as well. I just don't see anyone who's more of kind of, like you said, a counterpuncher kind of breaking through. I think it's going to be one of the big hitters again.
Well, there are many players that will have their chances at Wimbledon, and there is a lot more to come with us here on The Tennis Show. Stay tuned.
This is Love Sport.
This is The Tennis Show on Love Sport Radio, and we've been talking about the upcoming grass court season, a grass court season that's been delayed somewhat by water falling from the sky. Yes, it's been raining, and no, we're not in Paris. And Anna Smith and myself have been over in Nottingham earlier today, even. Play was moved indoors because that's how bad it's been over the past few days. Anna, tell us a bit about what you've been doing in Nottingham while no play has been going on.
I have actually been working in player services this week. I have to give a shout out to Chantel and Freya who've been helping me out. But yeah, I've been behind the scenes. I've been on the other side of the desk for once, seeing what it's like for us players being divas. can I just say no player has been a diva at the moment. So yeah, but it's been torrential downpours. Not quite the summer we were looking for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a shame because it would be nice to get some grass court tennis rather than indoors and no one can see it. So fingers crossed that the weather forecast improves.
How have the players been coping with that? Because they schedule a week to come to Nottingham to prepare for Wimbledon in what is a short grass court season. How are they coping with not being able to play on those lawns?
Yeah, it's hard because obviously, you know, there's a quick turnaround between the French Open and then coming out to Nottingham. So obviously everyone wants to get in as much practice as they possibly can and everyone's having to go inside. So, you know, there's a lot of unhappy players who are having to practice indoors, which isn't ideal for them. So it's very frustrating, but obviously at the same time, there's really nothing we can do about it. So it's kind of just be patient and do a little sun dance.
When tournaments like this are hit by the elements, which thankfully isn't often in the extremity that we've seen this week because it really has been relentless, when this happens, it raises the question, does the grass court season need to be longer? We have nearly an 11-month long season. The majority of that is on hard courts. You've got a bit more than grass that's played on clay courts, but then we have 5 weeks, really, of the official grass court season, and it's gone. Now, the finalists in Nottingham last year were two of the semi-finalists at the recent French Open, Ashley Barty and Johanna Konta, both of whom love to play on the grass, and due to their heroics in Paris, both of whom have had to pull out of this week's tournament, shortening their grass court season. Roz, what kind of an impact does this have?
I think less of an impact than we'd think, because they do need to rest. And my biggest concern, I did actually ask Joe, you know, what are your grass court seasons? Because it's an awfully quick turnaround. Mm. And to my immense relief, she did say, we're going to have to sit down and look. And then obviously Ash pulled out as well. So with a week's rest, that's fine. And she will be, don't forget that Birmingham and Eastbourne are both premier events. So you're going to be up against the top players, which is what you want to be doing, to be playing the top players on that surface. And then just hope that, you know, this is just a week of anomaly. And then by the time we get to Birmingham and Eastbourne, we might have that big ball of fire in the sky. Might.
Maybe.
I studied in Birmingham. I don't think that's likely.
Anna, you very quickly said earlier in the show that grass is your favourite surface. So I might be able to guess your answer here, but should the grass court season be longer?
I personally would like it. And I think, you know, a lot of the girls would like it as well. It is a lot of pressure. You know, if you do have a good run at the French, it's highly likely that most people won't play the following week just purely because of the transition and the fact they need to rest.
Of course.
So it does make it hard. If they had that little break, if there was even just a week in between the two, if there was somehow a way that they could add that to the schedule, I think it would be great. Because you don't want to see the top players pulling out. You know, Joe ideally would have loved to have played, and I'm sure Ash would as well, being the defending champion. But at the same time, you've got to look at the long-term picture, which as a player, it can be hard to do. You know, when you're winning, you want to keep playing and keep playing. But at the same time, there are 52 weeks of the year and you're playing sort of 25 tournaments in the year and you've got to be smart. And I think sometimes, you know, it's the way the schedule works. It just doesn't make for a time where you can have breaks. So it's a shame. I wish it could be, you know, a couple of weeks longer, but I don't know how it's gonna work.
Well, let's talk about this a bit because I do remember in recent years Wimbledon was actually pushed back a little bit to extend the grass court season. I mean, believe it or not, friends, this is an extended grass court season. It didn't used to be this long, which is crazy to talk about. But what about moving the French Open? Can we nudge that forward? Can we afford to?
I think there was talk about it being nudged forward, and there's talk about the Australian Open being nudged as well, so that there's a knock-on effect. But it takes a while for that trickle effect to work. I mean, I find that whole 13-week stretch of the clay and the grass back-to-back exhausting, and I'm not even playing. But, you know, there's a lot to cover in that spell, and it's relentless. And I do remember somebody once saying, by the time I got to Wimbledon, my first ever Wimbledon, just remember, this is the worst that the tour will ever get, because there's a break straight after Wimbledon and then you've got that big hard court churn. I mean, I think we should have a longer grass court season because it takes a while to make that adjustment. And if you want your big players going deep, they need to get that match time. And of course, the weather in Britain can be sketchy,
so to say the least.
Sketchy. So could we fit another week in?
Where?
I don't know. And that's the thing. You'd maybe have to drop. But what would you drop in the clay?
Well, there are quite a few big Madrid, Rome. There's so you can't drop Premier those, ones. You can't drop those.
And then you've got that duff week in between Madrid and Rome.
Yeah.
But then you'd have your players playing Rome and then going straight into Roland Garros, which is going to be tough.
Yeah, I really don't know how they're going to work it. That's the problem. It's
you need that duff week.
Yeah, but where you're going to find it, I really don't know.
Well, what about dropping something during the hard court swing at the beginning of the year? You've got a number of months between the Australian Open and the French Open. February, there's not really much going on in February. For tennis fans can take a bit of a nap, if you like, during the February. They do. We know that they do. There's not a terrible amount happening. So is it possible to pull a week from there to add a week in later on in the year?
I'll tell you what I'd get rid of is Charleston and then that green clay nonsense.
Oh, you're not a fan of Charleston?
I'm not a fan of Charleston. That's not clay, that's breeze block that's been crushed by a bulldozer.
Do you know what? If I had to play on clay, I'd actually choose green clay. It's a little bit, yeah, it's a little bit quicker and it's less slippery for me. So I prefer green clay.
Green
clay, yeah, that's the one.
Have you played at Charleston, Anna, out of interest?
No, that's actually one of the tournaments I haven't played at. I can't remember if there's something on the same week as Charleston.
Yeah, there's Monterey on hard.
I've played Monterey. Yeah, I played Monterey instead because I used to play Acapulco and Monterey. So I went for those.
In future years, Anna will probably be making the trek over to play that event. Anna,
not after Ross has said that, I won't be.
Well, let's talk about you from your personal playing experience when we've all gathered ourselves together again. It's a wild evening over here. You spoke about grass. Can you make some, I don't know, examinations between which surface is the most demanding physically?
Oh, God. I think it's hard courts, obviously, more impact. You know, it's terrible for your joints. I mean, not terrible, but it's not great. And then, obviously, the clay is more physically demanding on the muscles, having to do the sliding or the stretching, and just the longevity of the matches as well. And then grass, obviously, it's very short, but it's very explosive. The chance of slipping over. So there's lots of different issues with each surface. But I don't know, obviously the players nowadays are so strong and flexible and quick. So, you know, they're kind of trained for every surface. So I don't know, each surface has its own pros and cons.
And the very best have to be capable across all three. Well, good for Johanna Konta taking a bit of a break, because seven straight weeks of tennis, competitive tennis, would have been an awful lot. Stay with us at The Tennis Show. We've got much more to come and we will be back with you shortly.
This is Love Sport.
Well, you're listening to The Tennis Show, and we're coming up to the segment of the show that I thought was coming earlier, but here we are arriving at the moment where we dissect the controversy. This week, Boris Becker's been talking. Despite Dominic Thiem's run at the French Open, he's distinctly unimpressed with what tennis players call the next generation, the upcoming players on the men's tour. He says they need to show up a bit at the Grand Slams and need to improve mentally and start really trying to take down these three guys, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic, where it matters at the big tournaments. He wants them to improve. Roz, you're not looking entirely happy, sat to my left. What do you think?
I think Boris, come on. I mean, I can understand, you know, maybe last year if you levelled that at Thiem, he did look overwhelmed, you know, and I think the sense of occasion did get to him. You know, that first set was the highest quality and then he took a set off him and you can't really ask much more than that. I mean, granted, he really needed to keep that momentum going. That slip cost him dearly, but he's getting there. He's almost getting Andy-esque with his, I'm almost there.
Well,
it's getting easier.
Dominic Thiem is the only male player currently aged under 28 to have reached a Grand Slam final. He's reached two of them. Now, that stat on its own doesn't sound exactly brilliant, but is there more to that stat than meets the eye?
This was his fourth semi-final at Roland Garros, two finals. I think he's well on his way. You know, if he does it next year, I think he'll be a lot more prepared. And it's all about the experience. I mean, the first time, all brand new, a bit like Vondrousova, a bit bunny in the headlights. And this year, he actually came to play. It's just that dip. And against anybody else, he would have had a chance. But against somebody like Nadal, you're not going to get away with it.
He's relentless, isn't he? Well, outside of Dominic Thiem, there's a host of rising stars on the ATP who, personally, I think have been doing pretty well for themselves. Alexander Zverev has won several Masters 1000s, which is more than a lot of long-time pros can say for themselves. Stefanos Tsitsipas is pushing through. Anna, what do you think of the younger crop? And do you think that Boris is giving them a bit of a hard time here?
I think a little bit. I mean, you have to look at Roger, Rafa, Novak and Andy. They're kind of freaks of nature. You see how many slams they've won. I think they're probably three of the greatest players of all time. So I think he's probably being a little bit harsh. If you take those away, then Thiem's probably winning a slam. Zverev's winning a slam. Tsitsipas is making finals of slams. I think you have to look at the fact that how much these guys have dominated and actually realise how good they are. You know, I don't think we're going to see the likes of Roger Federer again, Rafa again on clay, what he's done. You look at Novak winning six Australian Opens, is it, I think? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's phenomenal what those guys have been doing. So I think they deserve a lot of credit. And that's the reason why these younger guys haven't necessarily come through. So I think it's probably, there maybe is an element of truth. But also at the same time, I think these guys are just absolutely phenomenal.
So are we saying this is more of a mix of things then? Some great things on the side of the big three, but also maybe a few things that could be tweaked for the upcoming stars?
Well, I think it's been very harsh, because if you're going to level that criticism at the young guys, you really need to look at the Lost Boys generation that, with the exception of all people, Marin Cilic and Martin Del Potro, nobody else broke that stranglehold. And that there's a whole generation of players of which much was thought. Dimitrov, for example. You know, Nishikori, even if he's capable of taking the court without falling apart. You know, you've got this whole generation of players that did nothing. I mean, Marin Cilic won the US Open. For the love of God, I mean, come on. You know, that was the only, in fact, him and Del Potro are the only ones that have broken that stranglehold before Stan came along. Mm-hmm. And we're now living in a world, what a time to be alive, where Stan could actually overtake Andy in terms of slams. And we're still talking about somebody from their generation, from the Roger, Nadal and Novak generation, still mixing it up with them. So I think Boris is just stirring the pot just to get a little bit of attention. Let's not sound the death knell just yet.
The thing is, I've noticed a bit, and it's mainly, and I was mentioning this to Anna before, John McEnroe, extremely vocal, because that's who John McEnroe is. But sometimes Boris Becker, you know, Margaret Court doesn't really seem to want Serena to overtake her record of all-time Grand Slams, but who would at the end of the day? But these older players, former champions, legends for sure, don't seem to ease at the idea with this generation of champions rising up and overtaking them. Do you think there's an element of this in these comments that are being made? Is that reflected in Boris making this kind of statement?
How many slams did Boris get?
I can't even remember. I'm not gonna lie. I do not know off the top of my head.
Don't think anywhere near Novak and Rafa though.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean,
he got six.
I was gonna guess at six. But
Johnny found
the ball
in there.
but yeah, you're saying he got six. I mean, you know, Djokovic has got six of those just in one slam alone.
And Rafa's Nadal has got double that. In one as well.
So, you know, of course they don't want their records to be expunged, but, you know, time is moving on and the game, I think, has moved on a lot as well since Boris's day.
Massively. I think you look at the fact that did he win when he was 17?
17.
I mean, you know, there's hardly anyone in the top 100 who's that age, apart from Felix Aliassime, kind of broken through and had great runs recently. But, you know, I think the men's game especially has become so physical that until they kind of grow into themselves and develop that physique, I think it's so hard to break through. You look how strong Rafa, Novak, Roger, Andy, Stan, Del Potro. I mean, he bludgeons the ball. You know, you're not having a boy. It's like boys playing against men. I think it's hard for anyone who's young to break through. So, you know, it's harder, I think.
I have a quick question, though.
Yeah, sure.
We're talking about grass. In your time in playing the grass, has the surface actually changed? Has it been sped up?
No, I think it's got slower.
You think it's got slower?
Yeah, it's a lot more like a hard court nowadays.
Right.
Apart from sort of the other tournaments, you know, Birmingham, Eastbourne, they play a lot kind of more like a grass court. The bounce is a little bit lower. But for me, Wimbledon, especially when the sun's shining, is really like a hard court. You know, there's no bad bounces. The ball's pretty high. It's not that quick. So for me, it's pretty much like a hard court.
Interesting.
Well, taking it back to the next gen players, I think what we're trying to say here is that it's less of a mental strength thing, almost a more of a physical strength thing in some respects when it comes to these guys taking down the top players. I mean, we've seen the likes of Alexander Zverev, Borna Coric, Felix Aliassime is stepping up, Denis Shapovalov. They can beat these guys and they've done it at lesser stages. But is best of five sets an issue? Is that the thing at the major tournaments as much as the status of these players they're up against?
I definitely think it has a factor. I mean, yeah, you said it yourself, Zverev has won probably more Masters than any of his generation and even the generation before that.
Mm.
You know, and when he broke through at that level, everybody was like, rejoice, at last we have somebody that's going to challenge. And then you get him to best of five and he waves about like a stick of white asparagus and then, you know, that's been boiled too long. So
that is one hell of a comparison. So, I'm sure he'll like that.
Luckily, if he's listening.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he'll be listening, so sorry, Sasha. But asparagus is a German thing, so hey. But, you know, he just doesn't, you know, I mean, taking the scenic route, what, two or three times already in the early rounds in the French, it's not going to help you.
But do you not think it's a mental thing as well when he reaches the slams, because he's kind of got that record where he's, like you said, he has done so well at other tournaments in the Masters Series, he's won the end of season finals. And then when he comes into the slams, he maybe has such high expectations for himself that he just kind of feels so under pressure that it's causing an issue.
I definitely think that there's a huge amount of that because you know, I mean, I think last year's French was the first time he actually made it to the second week. You know, and people were like, well, you're going to have to cancel your taxi to the airport because, you know, you'd actually discovered what the second week of a slam looks like. And now he needs to build on that. But, you know, it's one of those things. He for me, he's peaking at the wrong events. That's the thing. Nobody doubts that he's a world-class player. But for me, he's peaking. That he needs to now change his approach and peak for the right event.
But what do you think he should change?
It's difficult to say. He's done a lot of working out and he gets very disappointed because nobody can actually sort of see his muscles. He's like, I've got them!
In his legs he has.
Yeah.
Really strong quads.
I think he's actually quite a fit specimen. But
he's just
so
tall. That's a problem.
Yeah, and I think if he needs to stop going on these scenic routes. There's no doubt he's got the fitness to play best of five, but then if you look at team had, I think, three four-setters before he finally discovered that you could actually win a match in three. Hooray. But he's so supremely fit that he can get away with that slight thing. I think it was that fifth five-setter that did for him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, Zverev will fight to the death and get those long wins, but by the time you get to the second week, it catches up with him.
Yeah,
and that's the thing that he needs to work on. You know, none of the other players do this. They all breeze through the early rounds, and they save that for the second week. And he just doesn't have that yet. I don't know what he needs to do to get a grip on it, but you know, if he does, if he cracks that, then he'll be in contention for sure.
Well, do the next generation lack the mental strength to beat the big three? I think we've come to the conclusion that there may be a bit of lack of mental strength in there, but we're talking physical strength over best of five sets against the big three at majors, and it's a tough ask. We'll be back with the tennis show shortly to talk more tennis and look ahead to the grass court season.
This is Love Sport.
Well, it's the tennis show here on Love Sport Radio with myself, Abigail Johnson, doubles player Anna Smith, and Roz Sattar, who does much work on the tennis scene and elsewhere here at Love Sport Radio. We've been talking about the French Open, we've been talking about grass courts, and now we're going to properly look ahead to the grass court season. It's a much loved time of year here in the UK, raining or sunshine, and there's going to be plenty of players to keep an eye on because, as we've said, on the women's side of things, very, very much open. So let's start with younger players. We've talked a bit about the next gen on the men's side, and there have been some teenagers that made moves at the French Open. If I was to ask you, a younger player you have your eye on, man or woman, who would it be?
I think based on the French, I'm going to be keen to see what Vondrousova does on the grass. Czechs seem to love the grass. I don't know why, because they don't tend to play much on grass. They don't have much grass in the Czech Republic, apparently.
Not that I'm aware of. I think it more just the style of play. I guess we've seen Petra absolutely love the grass, and I hope, I don't know if she's going to be back for the grass season.
She's not in Birmingham. It's just too soon. So, you know, I think she might try a couple of rounds at Eastbourne.
Well, I hope so, because she's one of my favourites to watch on the grass. And if she has a couple of matches at Eastbourne, I think she's probably a contender at Wimbledon again. You know, she gets through those first couple of rounds. I think she's definitely one for the title. But, you know, like you said, Vondrousova, it'd be interesting to see how Anisimova can back it up.
Kenin is another one.
Yeah, she's definitely one. Yeah, I don't know. I think the thing is, with the women's draw, it's so open. You literally, there's about 25 players who could win it, I think, and it's so hard to pick.
Exactly. I mean, Sofia Kenin took out Serena Williams at the French Open, and Anisimova took out Halep, who was the defending champion. And is it going to be the same players every time? We've literally got a bucket full of WTA players, and there could be a different one of them each time that's taking out the big names. That's the vastness of the talent, is it not?
Interchangeable player.
100%. I mean, there's just so much talent out there, and it's an exciting time, I think, for the tour, and that is not just a lack of consistency, which I feel it has been sometimes in years gone by. There have been players almost afraid to step up and take over where others have left off. They're almost, they can see it, and the fact that they can see it and they can see the opportunity, they wilt a bit in the face of it.
There's a whole generational thing that I find quite amusing. So when I first joined the circuit, Halep, Kvitova, Kerber to a certain extent were still sort of coming up through the ranks. And I remember asking Anna Ivanovic, you know, because they were fearless back then. Mm-hmm. I remember asking Ivanovic, she said, oh yeah, you know, we had way more respect. They just come along and they just hit the ball at us as if they don't care. And then I found myself asking Halep the same question after she got thumped by Anisimova, and she said, yeah, they don't care. You know, now I feel old. And I thought, it's just ironic that just a few years ago, Anna Ivanovic was saying exactly the same about you. So, you know, there is a generation of fearless players that have got nothing to lose. So they swing and hit free. And then the others feel that they've got a target on their back. And they almost need to learn how to go back to that visceral self again. And they do. I mean, they're champions and they have the experience. And eventually that experience will win through. But, you know, we've also seen some fall by the wayside. Kazakhina, you know, I mean, last year's Indian Wells was amazing. It was Osaka, Kazakhina, and we thought that was it. That's the future of the WTA. Osaka's gone on and soared, and Kazakhina's really struggled to put it together. But somebody, I can't remember who, said to me, you have one good year, then you can have a bit of a wobble year, as Joe did, and then it's all about what you do in year three. So it'll all be about what Kazakhina can do next year. We're seeing Joe come out of her wobble year and into a fantastic year three.
Absolutely.
So I think that's what we'll see from the youngsters.
It's interesting because such is the openness of the women's tour that it makes it hard to say who's a dark horse. I mean, is it the former champions that aren't quite in form? Is it the younger players rising up? When someone is to ask you who's a dark horse for Wimbledon or the grass court season, what do you say?
I just don't know how to answer that question, because I don't think there are any dark horses, but then I also don't think there are any standout favourites either. I think you obviously have the men's side, which you have the clear favourites, but then on the women's side, I think, yeah, like we said, there could be a pool of 25 players who you could just pick out of a hat and they could easily go on and win. So I think that makes it quite tricky. There's so many talented players out there who hit the ball so well, and it's just anyone who can string together those 2 weeks and just get a little bit of luck, the conditions go their way, the draw opens up. You know, I think that's probably more what it's going to come down to.
When we look at the men's side of things, can we look outside of the big three when it comes to the championships, Wimbledon?
Not on grass, I wouldn't say.
No,
I don't see it.
It's just too hard a surface for the players that are in that chasing pack to contend with, plus best of five, plus the aura of the big three.
But also, I think the weapons that the big three have to nullify, you know, you look at someone like a Raonic and Isner, their serves would be amazing on grass. What does Rog do? Brings out the chip return, just makes every first serve return, which takes away all the extra 3 points that they think they would have had. So, you know, I just don't see where the winner's going to come from. Even you look like someone like Stan, can he physically hold up for 7 matches? I don't know anymore. I don't see anyone out of the top three.
Well, the one thing I've noticed with Wimbledon, at the French Open, we saw the top 4 men's seeds all made the semis. At Wimbledon, there generally seems to be, even if it's just one, an early upset. Nadal has fallen victim in the first week of Wimbledon a few times in recent years. Last year, we saw Kevin Anderson take out Roger Federer from 2 sets of match point down, which I still find incredible. So if there is to be an upset of one of the lead contenders, what kind of player could pull off that upset? Who are we looking at?
Well, you're looking at... I'll put Nadal in there and he'll fall to a big hitter. Somebody that's just going to keep him at bay.
A Kyrgios sort of Rossel style, yeah, or someone like that who can just play lights out tennis and just hit him off the court.
Yeah, I mean, I was there when Kyrgios took him out that year, and it was he just dismantled him completely and left him completely discombobulated on the court.
I just remember him looking and just was like, he was absolutely baffled. And when he played Rossel as well, the first service he was coming out and the forehands he was hitting were just a joke. Like, Rafa was just literally looking at them as they were flying past him, like, where is this coming from? And he kept doing it over and over again. So I think it'd have to be someone who, yeah, is a big hitter, who can literally hit.
Unpredictable as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think once you get, Rafa gets a pattern, then he gets into it. But when you have someone who's just going to come up with, you know, just magic, then I think he struggles.
It's interesting to note about the players that have beaten Nadal. We've got Kyrgios, who's still very much on the scene, but Gilles Muller, who's since retired, Dustin Brown, who has so much talent for this surface but doesn't regularly show up. Sergei Stakhovsky is another one who he took out Nadal or Federer.
Federer.
So actually, a lot of these players causing upsets are not necessarily players that then go on to great things. Is that something that we're likely to see again at Wimbledon?
I would say so, yeah. I think the surprises are going to be someone that has a lights out game and then just can't back it up the next time around, or certainly the next couple of rounds.
I think that's the issue in all of the slams. If anyone takes out Roger, Rafa or Novak, I think it's a struggle to back it up. That's the problem. I think they can do it for one match, and then the come down after that, I think, is really hard to get yourself back up for the next match and be able to sustain that again for 5 sets. And I think that's going to be the issue, whereas those guys have that mental capacity to be able to do it match after match after match. And that's where I think the other players really need to try and focus on that a little bit more. So that's probably why I think the big three will probably take the title.
Well, we're at that point in the season where a lot of British players are suddenly thrust into the spotlight as tennis comes to the UK, and quite a few are offered wild cards. And in most recent years, we've seen players making use of those positions. Katie Swan, Katie Bolter both went around at Wimbledon last year, and in pre-Wimbledon events as well. Maya Lumsden, wild card in Nottingham, has won through in her match today in a first round. Anna, you know quite a few of the Brits. Who do you have your eye on to do something special on the grass courts?
I'd probably say Katie has a good chance. I think she's got a good game.
Which one?
Many Katies.
I'm going to say both. I'm just going to leave it at both.
Katie Dunn as well, though. We've got 3 Katies.
Yeah, we do. Just all of them.
Let's look through the books, you know, and find all the Katies.
Exactly.
It's going to be overflowing.
No, I'd say Katie Swan. I think she's got a good game for grass. Hits the ball big, flat. is quick. If she can get some matches in, I don't see why she couldn't do well. Harriet Dart's obviously been doing well as well. I know she's coming back from injury, but I think she won today.
Did she?
Yeah,
she's
got
lovely
the victory.
And feisty. She's got a great game.
She's got a great attitude to the game as well. She doesn't take any prisoners. So I think that will stand her in good stead. Hopefully, if Katie Bolter can get back for Wimbledon, I think she could have a good run with her game and the way she played at Fed Cup. If she takes that confidence forward, I think she could easily do well. And then, you know, again, the same with like Heather. If she gets on a little run, she always performs well at Wimbledon. So I think she can do well. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed for all of them.
Well, Andy Murray might be taking a back seat at the moment, but we certainly have a large crop of British talent who are being given plentiful opportunities at the moment at Nottingham yesterday indoors. Jack Draper and Paul Jubb, British teenagers notching their first major wins at challenger level. Now, can't play down the challengers. There are some tough competitors there. And we'll be keeping an eye on the progress of all the young Brits, wildcards or not, as they make their way in the grass court season. This has been The Tennis Show with Abigail Johnson, Anna Smith and Roz Sattar, joined as well by Johnny Burrow. And thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week at 7 o'clock.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.